financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. What are we talking about today?
Oh, you know, we're talking about what to do with your money. I'm getting comments from people, you know, what's going to happen in the market? What about these tariffs? What about the real estate market? So there's a lot of, from what my perception is, some insecurity about what's going to happen. Are things going to be more expensive? Mm-hmm. Why does this happen? What can we do about it? And I'm talking to a lot of people who are borderline depressed. Like they're saying, I'm not going to turn the news on anymore. I can't look at it. I can't think about it.
Well,
I'm
it seems like it changes from day to day. Yeah, it seems like it changes day to day too.
That's exactly the problem, is that it's unnerving, right? And it is exhausting to try to keep up on it. We typically, now I'm going to try my best not to be political here because that's not my job, but typically in generalizations, we judge presidents on their first 100 days. And we are less than 3 weeks in, or about 3 weeks in, on this presidency. And people are just scrambling to figure out what's going on. Now, some people think that's great. Like, hey, there's so much stuff, you know, the other people can't keep up. But for those of us who have to deal with it on a daily basis and try and remain informed and still go to your job and help other people and do all of those things, it's a lot to keep up on. I mean, it's like a soap opera, right? That we don't have control of.
And it's different countries with different tariffs. So then you got to kind of look up like, well, am I going to get a big, I was seeing somebody had ordered something from China and there was like a $108 fee on there. And they were like, yeah, no. So it's different countries, different amounts.
That's interesting that you're seeing that already. And the reason I wanted to talk to you about this is because you do the news. Mm-hmm. And so I knew you would have some input on it. Let's just be clear about, I just want to clear up the main misconception. What I think, and probably most economists think, is a main misconception. And it's that tariffs harm the companies that are producing the materials, and they're not going to touch us. And that's just, dare I say it, that's just silly, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, we are going to pay the price of those tariffs in one of two ways. If the tariffs continue to take place, the countries that those are being imposed upon will retaliate, either with passing along the higher cost of importing these things, right, to the consumer because they have to make it up somewhere, or they will put their foot down and say, we're not going to pay that. We're just going to produce less of it. And as we know about supply and demand, when you have less supply and you still have demand, what happens to prices? They go through.
They go up. Yeah.
So I wanted to touch on about half a dozen things that might increase substantially in prices in such a way that maybe we can, not that I'm any expert in this area, right, but that maybe we can talk about it and sort of explain to people why this might matter, what you might be able to do about it, and how this thing really works. So let's take the first of the things that I think, if tariffs continue to be imposed on, let's say, Canada and Mexico. Let's leave China out of it for just a moment, even though we import things for China for this too. Let's just take Canada and Mexico, and let's just take your morning drive to work.
Okay.
Cars have parts that are required in order to assemble the vehicle. Although we assemble vehicles here, you know, even things like Kia or Hyundai, right? We're assembling them here, but those parts cross the borders to Canada and Mexico, sometimes multiple times before this car is assembled here. That means, now, if Canada sends their stuff to Mexico, they don't pay a tariff, right? But if we're in the middle, there's a tariff. So if we're importing things from Canada and we're importing things from Mexico, and both those things go into your car, you're paying two tariff price rises, right? on your car because the prices from Americans who are importing those, American car assembly manufacturers who are importing those parts, have had to pay that tariff on both sides. Right?
So they're not going to absorb that. They're going to pass it on to the customer, right?
Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's business, right? So they are either going to do that or they are going to, and this isn't just cars. This is sort of the way things work along everything. You're either going to say, I'm going to pay the tariff and I'm going to raise my price and pass it along to the consumer. Or you're going to say, gee, I'm a little worried that consumers might not buy that. So I'm not going to produce as much.
Right.
I'm not going to pay those import tariffs and I'm just going to send less there. Right. Cars is one of the easiest things, I think, for people to understand because everybody gets that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into building a car. And we're going to get it from other places. We don't manufacture everything here in the U.S. anymore, right? So we've got to get that from other places. And these other places will retaliate. I think it's pretty clear to say that if you start harming their economy, they're going to have something to say about it.
And they already have. Yeah, it's just going back and forth.
That's right. Yeah. So there was one thing about one of the other things that will go up in price, and we can talk more about cars and things, of course, what to do and how to shield yourself from it as best you can, right? But again, your point is a hefty one, which is we just don't know. Probably one of the most comforting things I'm able to say to people when they're asking me about their finances and they're saying, I just saw on the news that this is going to happen. One of the most comforting things, I don't love it, but I'm able to say to them, I don't think you can rely on that right now. It may change tomorrow.
I was going to say, wait 5 minutes. It'll probably change. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what is so unsettling for people is they can't catch up. They don't have any ground rules that they can rely on at the moment. Things are changing so quickly that it's, and I can only speak to the, you know, speak about the people that I've spoken with. Which is, you know, we live in a little bubble here in Massachusetts, but it's a pretty good cross section. And it's instilling some fear, some unrest. And that's causing people to make, or at least to call me about making more erratic financial decisions. Like I got a call the other day from somebody who said, should I pay off my car? I'm so worried that something's going to happen to my car payment. Okay, putting a tariff on a car that you already own is not going to change your car payment. But, you know, if you're if you don't have the time to make it your job to watch the news every day and read and, you know, get caught up on everything, you know, this is like the game of gossip. Somebody says, you know what, the price of cars is going to go up. And that somehow goes to the next person who whispers in the ear and says, I heard that car payments are going up. And that goes to the next person who calls me and says, I heard that this tariff is going to raise my car. You might think that's silly, but that was a real worry for that person.
Well, a little left of center of that. So when you're thinking about something like this, would you recommend then maybe leasing instead of buying right now? Because if you have to get a car part, it's probably going to have a big tariff on it where at least the dealer covers all that.
Well, that's an interesting question because the lease prices are based on sale prices, right?
Okay.
And your residual at the end of a lease. So this is what makes it so difficult, Jess, is yes, in theory, a lease might be a good deal for you. You might want to run out right now and buy a car because you're worried about this. But I'm going to tell you that when we're coaching people in these kinds of decisions, the important points about managing your money, the baseline, the things that you do to manage your money well, become ultra important. So I'm going to go back to let's not cherry pick this, right? A term I use all the time about just pick this thing and say I'm going to solve that problem.
Right.
Instead, go back to your roots, right? You know, start to think about, okay, how much do I have in savings? How can I increase what I have in savings? Can I put it somewhere safe? Can I make enough money on it? Because I don't know what's going to happen in the immediate future, but I think I might need a car, right? And so could you run out now and buy a car? Yeah, if you're already in the market for it and that's what you want to do, okay, fine. You know, maybe you use this opportunity to get a car, but, you know, we don't know what else is going to happen. So be careful about strapping yourself in a car payment just because you got nervous You saw a show like this and somebody said car prices are going to go up and you got nervous. You said, I better buy now, right? If you're already buying now, okay, fine. Use the same kinds of rules that we already talked to you about, which is don't overbuy, don't overpay, don't take on a car payment that's larger than you can afford, right? Think about lease versus buy and the reasons to do that. So I think, along with cars, we're looking at things like houses, big things like houses, and little things like avocados, right? So when you're talking about a tariff, let's just be clear about that's a duty. That's a tax. It's a thing that increases somebody's price, cost, right? And that's going to have to go somewhere. Talking about cars, this idea of free trade in the car world has been, we've had free trade in the car world where we import and export and there's no tariffs on stuff or very little since the 1990s. Now, President Trump did impose some tariffs in his first round in his presidency, but they seem to have been pulled back not long after then, which is something we might expect here, maybe, if history teaches us anything. It may be, and again, I'm no political strategist, right? But maybe it's a play to say, here's our power as the US, here's my power as the president. I'm going to do this unless you make a deal with me. And if you don't, then I'm going to enforce this. And if you do make a deal with me, then I won the game and I've, pushed this into effect. It's a dangerous game. It's a really dangerous game with somebody like Canada, who supplies what something like 90% of the maple syrup in the world, okay? And about 75% of our maple syrup here. Now, you and I are local. We know we have Vermont. We know we have, Massachusetts. We have
We used
maple
to
trees here.
tap our trees in Covington, Mass. I remember that.
That's right. But we are tiny, tiny, tiny compared to the amount of people that use something like maple syrup. Maybe maple syrup doesn't matter to you, but there are things that will matter to you, and we can talk about that in the second half as well. But I just wanted to sort of contrast, something really important like your car and something you could do without, like an avocado, but they both affect you, right? If you love guacamole, you're going to be paying for it, or you're not going to be doing it.
And those little costs add up for sure.
They do.
Well, let's get your phone number if anybody has any questions.
Certainly, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com anytime. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. I'm still here, and we're still talking about money, right? Still talking about tariffs and what could happen as these tariffs come into play. And I'd like to remind people that this could happen if Trump doesn't continue to put higher tariffs in place. We could irritate other countries by doing this, who then say, you know what? We're
We're going to
taking
do
our
that to
stuff
you.
off your shelves.
Oh, yeah.
And so there are lots of things. I mean, when you're trying to play a game of chicken like this, right? There are lots of things you have to consider. I think those of us who are in our area where we're in a sort of a college town, right? We're in a college area, would probably opt to be more open to conversation, to getting things on the table before threatening somebody and trying to come to some sort of agreement. But everybody works differently and people accomplish their goals differently. And so one of the things I point to here when I say, a country could just get peeved and just say, well, you know what? You are not the only power in the world. We are a country of wonderful things and we're not going to sell your stuff anymore. How do you like that? And that is exactly what was threatened in Canada recently about something near and dear to many of our hearts, which is alcohol. Not the kind you put in your car, the kind you imbibe, right? So, there was a moment there where many of the provinces, Ottawa, Montreal, a bunch of provinces in Canada said, we are going to take all of the American liquor off of our shelves. And we're not going to sell it anymore. So that was just days before they reached an agreement that a list, when they sent out a list, I could probably tell you who it is here. Ontario, British Columbia, Manitoba, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia, right? There was a list that went out to those provinces who agreed they would pull all American booze off their shelving starting on Tuesday after whatever that was, February 3rd, 4th, 5th, something like that for the article. So any U.S. alcohol, including beer and wine that Canadians could find, would likely see a price increase as it's on the menu for retaliatory tariffs. And that was according to an article from BBS. So, you know, this is just the kind of thing that could happen. Mexico's leader didn't seem all that pleased with this. And, you know, we get a lot of stuff from Mexico, including those little green things I was talking about, those avocados, right? We get most of the avocados in the world from Mexico. So, you know, things like when we're talking about alcohol, beer, Tennessee whiskey, tequila, those are things, beer in particular, Modelo, which, you know, probably isn't, in our area, that's probably not the most popular beer. But in the U.S., number one beer in 2023.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that.
No, neither would I. And I might have even thought Corona would give it a heavy run for its money. But I think it surpassed, I might be wrong on this, but I think it surpassed Budweiser or something big like that in 2023 as the number one beer in the U.S. Well, guess where Modelo comes from? Comes from Mexico, okay? So there are things like that beer or Tennessee whiskey or tequila that are argued you can't just produce those somewhere else. Where they're produced is the point, right? I'm getting Tennessee whiskey. It needs to be produced in Tennessee, okay?
Right.
I'm getting tequila, which needs to be produced in Mexico, whatever. So there are lots of things about that that concern people about the tariffs on alcohol. Now, what can you do? All right, we can argue, well, you could try to buy a car or lease a car or save your money. That's what you could do to defend yourself against car tariffs. You could say dry January gets extended for your beer and alcohol thing, right? You could say all these things and you could do this. But the fact of the matter is they're going to affect your life. Tariffs will affect your life. They are not something that just gets put on some majorly wealthy company who can absorb the cost and will, right? They're majorly wealthy for a reason. They know how to make money and they know how to pass the cost along to American consumers. One of the things that concerns me most about this is the immediate possible rise in fuel prices, right? So the U.S. doesn't have a fuel shortage, but many of the refineries here require what we call heavier fuel, thicker fuel, thicker crude oil, I should say, in order to produce the kinds of things that we need for cars and jet engines and thinner fuels like that. So we need to import that from someplace else because we don't produce that here, right? So we import, I'm looking for the amount here. So we import 61% of oil into the U.S. between January and November of last year came from Canada. 61%. I think most people, if you talk about fuel, hey, we get it from the Middle East, right?
Right. Yeah, that's your first thought.
Yeah, 61% came from Canada. Canada is, in fact, America's largest foreign supplier of crude oil. So there's a wake-up call if you didn't know that. So, of course, 25% tariff would be slapped on Canada for goods with a 10% on energy. But that's 10% on your gas prices, folks, plus whatever they decide to pass along or, as we're talking about, restrict the flow of. Right?
Yeah.
So there's two ways they can do this. They can pass the cost along or they can pull back the supplies. Both are going to have an effect on us, no matter how you slice that. So,
is there any correlation between tariffs and having to worry about a recession?
Well, that's a good question. a very good question. And at the risk of, you know, trying to qualify my answer, sure. I mean, there is a point where when people don't have enough money to buy the things they need and incomes are not going up in relation to that, eventually you start to look at an economic decline. And that can manifest in a number of ways, one of which is we end up in some kind of a recession. But I, you know, I'm not here to paint doom and gloom to people because I, again, we could wake up tomorrow and have all this done and there could be something else new, but I can't keep track any more than anybody else can at this point. I would say I just noticed that most of our thicker crude oil that we were talking about comes from Canada and some from Mexico. So those two would both hit us in that case. There was a quote from American fuel and petrochemical manufacturers that said many refineries need heavier crude oil to maximize flexibility of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel production. And that's what I was talking about. You can't just make it. You need that heavier crude oil, and we have to get that from other places. Housing prices, boy, here's the next thing. Housing prices, right?
They're already terrible.
Yeah, well, they are, but they have been, we've been surviving. People have been getting loans. They've been qualifying. They've been buying houses, right? We haven't seen the market completely fall apart yet. However, what are houses made of? Well, unless you have a brick house, and even if you do, most houses have a lot of lumber in them.
Now,
Trump says we have more lumber than we need. I would ask, why are we importing from Canada if that's the case, right? But we import a lot of lumber from Canada. And if we end up with a tariff on that, you know, the prices of houses are going to go up astronomically again. And I think, you know, people are saying that they're concerned about housing affordability if these tariffs come into play. So while we wait to see what's happening, what can I say that you can do? I could say that you can watch your pennies, you know, make your
The pennies
budget.
Are going away, Francis. The pennies are going away.
Yeah, they are. You know, it's a conundrum, I have to say, and one that I would have personally been happy to hear more about prior to an election from both sides so that we could understand better what tariffs really are, how they work, why somebody might choose to use them or not use them, what kind of fallout are we looking at? I mean, there are just so many things going on right now, from bird flu to tariffs to, you know, more nominees in other offices. We cannot keep track of it all. And when that happens, it creates some unrest. And when unrest happens, people make foolish decisions. They make decisions from a point of fear instead of from a point of knowledge. So, you know, I was a little uncomfortable even talking about this topic because I try to stay away from politics.
No. I agree with you. This is a tough one because you don't want to be political, but also like it does. That is like a little trigger for me when they're like, well, just tough it out. It's like, OK, well, you're not spending $7 on a dozen eggs or whatever it might be. It's a lot of money. Like, it's a lot of money, especially when we've talked about this before. It's like, supposed to allocate like only 25% to your rent or mortgage. Well, most people are doing like 50%. Yeah. Then you add in if gas goes up, groceries go up. Like, that's not even going out money or having fun money. That's just to live.
What I do is to help people manage their money properly and to make good decisions and to understand the amount of control that they actually do have over their lives when it comes to their finances, because most people, if you poll them, I think would agree, they have a lack of sense of control.
And yeah, it's interesting too that just thinking about tariffs, I do understand what you were saying kind of in the first half of the show about, you know, you're yielding it as power to maybe get the other side to fold. And in the meantime, the people are supposed to tough it out. But at some point, you can't tough it out anymore. At some point, you can't afford to buy the things you need. So there's a difference between being strong and trying to tough it out, and you can't put food on your table.
That's exactly right, Jess. And that's why I sucked it up and came on the air and said, okay, I'm going to talk about these tariffs, even though I may make some enemies, because, you know, wealthy people, they'll pay more for their avocados. They won't care. They don't, they don't check to see if they have money in their account before they fill up their gas tank. They don't care about a grocery list before they go to the store. If they see it, they like it, they buy it. That's how that world works. But for the rest of the people who are really struggling already, to talk to them about even a 10% rise on their gas prices. I mean, we're at $3 a gallon. That's $3.30 a gallon. You know, that stuff matters, right?
So, well, in the day-to-day stuff, like my son went to the Big Y yesterday, and he was saying, he called me on the way home, and he said, I spent $130 and I got three bags.
Yeah.
Like, and he didn't buy a bunch of junk, but it's like, for just a small amount of stuff, $130, and you add in like a family of four or six or whatever, you know, it's hard to make ends meet.
Yeah, and we aren't talking about, you know, fancy things that you don't need. We're talking about food. We're
Right.
talking about gas that you put in your car to get to work. We're talking about the car you drive to work, and we're talking about the house you have to live in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or that you rent. I don't care if you own or you rent. If housing prices go up, your expenses are going up, right? So, and when we talk about fuel, you know, if you heat your house with oil, guess what? There's a tariff on that if that happens, right?
And it's
so your fuel
already
prices
so
are going
high.
Up.
Yeah.
Or any, you know, any fuel,
electricity.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Electricity, anything is, I mean, everything is so interrelated, and the country is dependent on other things, you know,
It's
on other
interesting.
countries.
It's interesting to me too, you know, some of the things that you were giving out today, like I wouldn't necessarily think a specific thing was made in Mexico or China, or a part that you might need for something that you think of as American comes from those other countries. It'd be so neat to be able to see a list of all of the things. I bet there's so many.
You know, it's
I'm
funny
sure you
you say
have
that
one.
because we didn't even talk about China, but just to give you some idea, BBC did in that article I think I mentioned, BBC did make a tiny little chart, and it was interesting. 78% of delivery trucks are imported from Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, to the US, right? Let's see, what else? Computers, 34% from Mexico. I think everybody thinks that's China, right? Only 26% imported from China.
Yeah, that's
Very, very
interesting.
interesting. Yeah, I think something like insulated wire. We use insulated wire in everything. 53% of it is imported from Mexico. You know,
Yeah.
so we're going to feel this across the board if it happens. Electric batteries, 56% from China. No surprise, right? But petroleum, 58% from Canada. You know, the article I think said 61%
Yeah, that's
overall.
really interesting. I wouldn't have
I
thought
mean,
that.
yeah, so that I should give a nod to that article. It was a BBC article. And I think I don't remember what it was called, but if you looked up tariffs on BBC, you'd find it. And I love to read things like that. I read a number of articles that were really good, but it's a little tiny chart, but it was really good. It just gives you some idea of the kinds of things we're going to pay for. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure people will have questions on this because there's a lot to it. So what is your phone number that they could get a hold of you at?
Oh, don't call me with any questions. No. You can always call me with questions. It's 413-773-3333.
You can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rand. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess. Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Teller, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rayam. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm really good. We have a guest today.
We do. I love it when we have guests, especially when they really have something important to say. And so I'd like to welcome to Financial Fitness Justin Nabaty. And welcome, Justin.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you, Francis and Jess.
Thanks. So Justin works specifically, and not only, but specifically with what many people would call heavy hitters. We're talking about physicians, we're talking about institutions like Yale and Harvard. And okay, so he's got something to say here. And I wanted him to come on the show in part because we share a lot of commonality in the way we run our businesses, and the idea that we talk about the psychology of money and the reason people make decisions, not just about the numbers. And he helps people align their finances with their financial goals, with their life goals. So, I just want to say that he is a certified financial planner. But I will ask you, if you don't mind, starting with your story
Sure.
about can I give away your age? Well, I'm going to, folks. I'm going to give away his age.
You just
I
did,
just want to say that at age 39, Justin was faced with a decision. It's all yours, Justin.
So 16 plus years ago, almost 20 years ago, it was married into a family of doctors, and my wife's father's a doctor, both of her brother's wife, her aunt and uncle, her cousin's husband, father, and grandfather. And as I was going through undergrad, a lot of my friends and fraternity brothers went through the medical school residency and fellowship process. And I come from I'm the third generation in financial services, with my grandfather and father both being in the industry. And so here we are looking at a group of people who you would think have it figured out. Certainly they're brilliant, they're bright, they've got an amazing career ahead of them, taking care of people. And along the way, what I find out is that the number one financial concern among physicians is having enough money to retire. How is it possible that this group of people would have that be their number one concern? Makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and I would say that the general consensus is, oh my gosh, they make so much money. Why can't they, retire? And from my standpoint, I would say, first of all, their student loans are a fortune, two, three, $400,000 in student loans, right? And secondly, malpractice insurance, right? How the insurance companies pay slowly and pay less than you might think they're paying. The overhead is astronomical. But above all of that, where in medical school do you learn about managing your finances?
You don't. They actually don't. This isn't funny. I've had conversations with program directors, the doctors who are in charge of teaching the next generation. They'll tell us that it's not their job to teach doctors anything outside of the patient room. Most jobs don't necessarily come with a 10 to a 30 page employment contract, but doctors do, pretty much every single one. It's rarely do you find that a doctor does not have a large document drafted by an attorney. And these attorneys are working for the employer, and they're looking out for their best interest. And so they want to make sure they capture everything they can in the event that a doctor leaves. Well, what's the turnover rate like for young physicians? What's the likelihood of a physician continuing on with their first job? It's very low. And when they leave the job, there's usually clawbacks. There's signing bonuses that need to get repaid. There's income plans that are called income guarantees, which, okay, sounds, it says the word guarantee. Like, isn't that good? Isn't that like safe? Income guarantee means you're getting advanced money and you can keep this money if you produce enough. If you
Right.
don't produce enough, they're going to take it back.
In the rest of the world, Justin, we call that a draw.
It's a draw.
It's a draw,
It's a
okay?
draw.
You talk about a ripple effect or a trickle-down thing. If you're going to the doctor and you've either had, oh, I don't know, three primary care physicians in the last 2 years, okay? Or you're saying, I want this treatment, and they're saying, but insurance won't cover it. You need to be paying attention to this stuff, because if we don't solve this problem at the top, right, we aren't going to solve it at the bottom.
What you just said, the ripple effect, that word, it triggered me. And you think about trigger words. You literally gave me full body chills when you said that. Why? I'm not
Sorry.
kidding.
Yeah, well.
That's why if you saw me, if you replay the video here, you'll see I went like this.
Yeah.
You can't, I'm wearing sleeves right now, so I can't show you my goosebumps. But the ripple effect, when I got into the industry, it was like, okay, I want to do something that I actually care about, that I am deeply passionate about. And
Right.
I saw an opportunity where the community could flourish if doctors were in tip-top shape, patients would get good quality care, and I didn't even know how bad healthcare was back then. I really didn't. I thought, here's a vulnerable group of people that need help because they don't know what they're doing outside of seeing patients. But the issue that they are dealing with is if you give bad patient care, then the patient's not going to do well. So your community's going to suffer. So if we take care of the patient or take care of the doctors in a way that they're at their best, then patients will get better care and then that'll have an effect. So that it took me all the way back to the beginning of the very early stage, like this is it. This is where I want to go deep to make this happen. Do you know that two-thirds or more of doctors are on antidepressants and on
Oh my
anxiety
gosh.
medications?
Yeah.
Two-thirds. And actually, if you search the suicide rates among doctors, it's double the general population. Double. And in the last 40 years, what's happened is healthcare has gone from being controlled by physicians, to now being controlled by insurance companies.
That's right.
And
Yep.
is an insurance company going through medical school? No. Are they ever getting trained by a physician on how to take care of patients? No. So that has a ripple effect on what we receive. When we want to get a procedure done, the doctor has to get permission from the boss. Well,
Yeah.
who's the boss? It's the insurance company. Like the doctor knows what's best for us. They're the specialist, and yet they can't even decide. They get shut down. So it's a huge
Yeah.
factor to why our cost of healthcare is rising.
I certainly agree with you on that. And also, I'm sort of a big picture, you know, when I went right to this a ripple effect thing, I'm sort of a big picture kind of person, I think, in terms of larger pictures. You know, when you've been in your career for 10, 20, 30 years, you don't really want to say, hey, I don't like that the insurance company is now making my decisions. I better go back to college and learn how to be something other than a physician, a vet, a dentist, right? A medical professional. People signed up for one thing
They
quite some
did.
time ago
They
under the
did.
guise that they were going to have this nice lifestyle, that they would be well respected, that they would be doing something good in the community, and that they could make a difference. And now, if you know any, and I have several friends who are physicians, right? If you know any, and you have a frank conversation with them when you're not their patient, they will tell you it's a nightmare. I get 7 minutes with a patient.
It's
You know,
terrible.
if I go over 7 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever, then you probably know the number. But if I go over that, you know, I can't fit the insurance billing in.
This is not what healthcare is designed to be. And it may not sound like it's connected to the general public, but we're talking about people providing not just general office healthcare. These people are doing surgery, okay? Life or death situations on our pets, all of that, right? And we're not giving them any support in terms of finance. So I don't know why this isn't taught. So let me ask you that, Justin. When you're speaking at Yale or Harvard or the Mayo Clinic or the Cleveland Clinic, or you have a very impressive list of places you've spoken to in person or spoken at in person on website, which can I just say, is it, do they go to physiciansthrive.com?
It's Physicians Thrive. Yeah, that's where it all started.
Yeah, physicians plural, physicianssthrive.com. So if you go there, you can read about Justin Nabate. But when you go there and you say to them, you know, how come you're not teaching this? And they say it's not our responsibility,
That's what they say.
then what happens? Do you say, well, we've got a program we can bring, or what happens from that point
Well,
where they say, sorry, not our job, you know?
yeah, I share that example because that's where places really just kind of stick their head in the sand. There are others that will allow avenues for it, whether it's during work hours, which is usually already built out. They have their entire pipeline for the semester. Sometimes they'll do after hour sessions, they'll do retreats. They do have doctors come in and speak. It's really interesting. They'll even have alumni come and give talks that I started teaching back in the day. It's like they're communicating their story from a physician's perspective, but it's pretty narrow. To what you said at the beginning, we haven't touched on it yet, is they come out with an average debt of around $220,000. Can you imagine? You finish.
I can, yes.
I mean, I know you can because you're the pro at this, but you got 4 years undergrad and 4 years medical school, 8 years. And what do you have to show for it financially?
Yeah.
You have, we call it the imaginary McMansion. It's this mortgage that you have now. Now, it has a lot of value because you have the human capital associated with it, and you can create the income ongoing. But you have this debt boulder that you're carrying.
Yep.
And so anybody who has debt, it's to what you said, it affects you in a significant way. And we have a client who's a headache specialist, neurologist, and he teaches at businesses in the workplace about employee wellness in the workplace, absenteeism and presenteeism.
Yeah, we just talked about this on a show too, absenteeism and presenteeism.
It's a real expensive thing, and migraine, and it's this mysterious, debilitating disease, like actually headache, and it's like the number one, number two cause of disability is issues with your brain that you're having.
Sure. I'm having an issue with my brain right now. And we need to take a break for a minute. So I just want to ask you if you'll stay with us for the second half, Justin.
Sure thing.
Thanks.
All right. In the meantime, can we get your phone number?
402-515-6327.
And Francis?
413-773-3333.
And you can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with more part two coming up of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
And we are back. Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have a special guest today, which is always fantastic.
We do. Justin Nabaty is with us, and a CFP, a certified financial planner, for those of you who don't love the alphabet soup of the financial world. And, you know, I started the show by saying he has a special niche with physicians, but the idea here is that it is important to all of us. First of all, you may be a physician listening to this, or you may learn something from the show, but it's important to all of us to free these people who are in charge of our health care from the financial stress they have. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying we'll just pay off their student loans for them. That's a totally different show, but they're stressed about finance because they're not taught anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the rest of us, by the way. If you thought this was an elite sect that somehow had a handle on their money because they're brilliant physicians, you know, and think again, these people are brilliant, but they have the same problems we have at a lower level for money. So I wanted to ask Justin specifically to talk a little bit about, at this very basic level that affects us all, What the heck is going on with healthcare costs? Why do healthcare costs keep rising, involving insurance? Anything you can teach us about that, please.
Yeah, I wish we could just say it's one thing and then just go after that one thing and then it'd be problem solved.
Sure.
But one of the biggest issues is the administrative burden, which you've alluded to a little bit earlier with the coding and all the different hoops you have to jump through to practice medicine. But if you had to guess how many administrators there are for every one doctor in practice today, how many would you say?
Wild guess, 9.
It's 10. So you're spot on.
Oh, I was close.
Yeah, you're so close. That was awesome. Yeah, 10.
Thanks.
10.
Wow.
So why wouldn't it be that there would be like one or two administrators for 5 or 6?
Right.
Or like, why couldn't they come up with a way to run the business side efficiently from a regulation perspective to be able to support multiple people? If you work in any industry, let's say you have a sales team, usually have a sales manager. That one person is responsible for serving and supporting a number of people on the team.
Well, it was that way.
What's that?
When we talk about how things have devolved, right?
Yeah.
Not evolved.
Yeah.
It was that way. You know, somebody in my family used to work for an eye doctor's office, and there were 5 doctors in that office, and there were 3 people up front, and they handled everything.
Yep.
You know, so, and that was not very long ago. So what's happening?
When you can look at those charts that show the growth in the population of physicians over time, and it's very flat. And then you look at the growth in administrative personnel. It's actually like very alarming when you look at it. They haven't done a new study of this, And I don't know if somebody's just like preventing the data from coming out because they don't want to show how bad it is. Because I think the last time they showed it was like 2010. Like they showed like 2000 to 2009 or 10, and then it stopped. And they haven't produced the latest. But that's a factor. You've got technology and all the advances there. You got drug costs and what they're charging here in the US versus other places around the world. That's a major factor. We have people that are more chronic illness is a factor. Going back to doctors not getting education for finance or financial literacy, guess how many hours of education there is on nutrition for medical school?
I bet not many. Am I
it's
wrong?
Like, it's like maybe 8 hours.
Yeah. I mean, that's
4 years.
On nutrition. Yeah. You know, go ahead, please.
I mean, what's the most important thing when it comes to your health? You can't change your genes. You can't change who your parents are, but you can change what you consume and what your lifestyle is.
Sure.
Why aren't those two things like at the top?
Do you happen to know how many hours are spent on prescription medication?
I don't actually.
I bet it's a lot, probably, right?
The majority of the way that the whole thing is, it's all about sick care. It's not true healthcare anymore. There's health insurance is not healthcare.
Well, health insurance doesn't pay much for preventative medicine.
No.
Right. You know, you brought up the administration thing. And I think, when I talk to colleges and universities, they're suffering from a very similar thing. And so there's some overlap here. If you look at the amount of administration at a college or a university today compared to what it used to be, the administrative jobs are, plentiful now and needing to be filled. So there's all these layers. All of this costs money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, when you talk about why are the cost is the cost of something so high, we got 10 people. What was it? 10 administrators for every one physician?
It's the exact opposite of what it should be.
Yeah, they all get paid. And the same thing at the colleges, a lot of administrative personnel. Not that I don't want people to have jobs, but all of this stuff has to get paid. And so that is going to come from someplace. And, people will say, well, let the government pick it up. Well, where does the government get their money? The taxes. Who pays taxes?
Yeah. Us. Well, you're pressing on a nerve right now for me that really.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's four ways to spend money. And Milton Friedman, one of my favorite economists, talks about this. You can spend your own money.
Yeah.
Or you can spend other people's money.
Yeah.
On yourself. Well, you can spend your money on yourself. You can spend your money on other people. You can spend other people's on yourself. You can spend other people's money on other people.
Right.
And the system is so complex now, and it's almost like intentionally designed to be this way to make it difficult to address the problem. And you've got all these people now deciding how money should be managed, and it's not for your best interest. Some of the other things that factors with the cost of healthcare going up is fee-for-service models. They're trying to get doctors to do every single test. Like my father-in-law, he just retired at 45 years of emergency medicine. Mm-hmm. And he had run-ins with management where they were telling him, you need to order this test and that test. Like all these things you need to do for the patient. He's like, well, they didn't have indications for that. Like, I'm not going to go order all this stuff. That's why you get like 5, 6, or 7 bills sometimes when you go in, because you have different groups charging for different things. He got into not necessarily fights with them, but like they were pressuring him and they were threatening him that he needs to do these things. He's like, well, I'm supposed to do no harm and do what's in the best interest of my patient and look out for them. And the pressure is see as many patients as you possibly can, run them through, bill as many codes as you can, order as many tests as you can, even if it's not relevant. And I think it's what's hard for us as patients is we think the doctor is the problem, or the doctor tends to get pinpointed as the issue, when in reality, it's everything else behind them. There's so many competing forces that are driving the attention, and they don't even get to decide. So part of this is having that understanding that you're, in a way, it's almost as if there's doctors don't exist anymore, really, because of what we talked about before with the insurance companies taking over.
You know, you Justin runs a podcast called Doc Nation, DOC Nation, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I just wonder, you know, we try to do these shows where we sort of shine a light on a problem, and then we also try to say, you know, this is what could be done about it, right? So that people have some action points. So I will ask you, because Doc Nation, I believe, is a place where physicians can go and be in a meeting and discuss this kind of thing. Am I right about that?
Yeah. And actually, I'm glad you bring it up, because for you, the patient, this is you and me and every single one of us. All of us are a patient. Healthcare is in a terrible place. Why is it that in 2025, after all the investment, after all of the research, after all the technology, after all the things, we're in terrible health condition compared to how it used to be as a nation? So bad. And it's because doctors don't get time with you. They need more time with you, the patient. And they don't get that because of what's happened within healthcare with the corporatizing of medicine. And so I say that because there's a bill in DC right now called HR 10073. And why is this bill important? And why is one of our members of Doc Nation testifying and speaking and communicating with at congressional hearings about this? It's because for 24 years, Medicare has been cut for doctors, but it hasn't been cut for nurses. It hasn't been cut for physician assistants. It hasn't been cut for hospitals and the facility fees. But for physicians, the ones who we talked about before, 8 years of their life have sacrificed just to get the education piece. Then they go on for 3 to 7 more years of residency, and then 1 to maybe 5 or 6 more years of fellowship. Like, it could be 20 years that they're in this pipeline to help you take care of yourself. They're the only ones within the healthcare sector that's getting cuts. So
I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
So why would, if the patient needs better care, and the one who knows and can actually bring the care the best doesn't get time with you because cuts, cuts, cuts for 24 years, doctors are negative over 24 years on pay. They're negative. They're not even, they haven't kept up with inflation. So
no one will believe that, Justin. Believe it or not, nobody listening to this.
I know,
but it's true, right?
I know, but it's true. It, from where it used to be 24 years ago, it is down.
Yeah.
And malpractice is a major issue. And every doctor, I mean, it's going to come at some point. But HR 10073.
I have to ask you a question about that. Yeah. We only have a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
So first of all, what can people do? They can look up HR 10073.
Ask the congressman of your district to co-sponsor. There's over 70 co-sponsors. When we first got onto this, there was like 50. And so we've gotten a bunch more co-sponsors. There's over 213 congressmen that signed a letter supporting this. And this is all the way to the right, all the way to the left, and everybody in between. This is like across the board, it's bipartisan. So the people that you don't like and the people that you do like, everybody, you'll find it's getting the attention of, this is the most support we've seen. So this is to stop the cuts and even do some reversal to empower your person who's supposed to take care of you to be able to have more time with you. And if this goes through, this will be the first time in a couple of decades where we've seen something that could be fruitful to help you get better care.
I thank you for that. And we will put the information up so that people can go and find out about that and decide what they want to do. But I just want to say ask you one more thing. From a patient standpoint, I go to the doctor, I want to see a doctor, and somebody says, no, you need to see this nurse practitioner. The doctor's busy. You need to see, you know, somebody else. Is that, in your opinion, is that because Medicare will cover that full amount and the money is there and it's been cut back from the doctor side of it? I mean, that's really a layman's question, but I'm a layman when it comes to being a patient. So,
well, you know, there's two sides of business, right? I mean, you want to try to minimize costs. And you want to increase the amount of revenue coming in, just simple math.
Yep.
And the cost for NPs and PAs to the healthcare establishment is less. So they're going to prefer that all day long. You do have the factor that comes into play, which is the physician shortage. We don't have enough doctors as it is. There aren't enough residency spots open, huh?
I wonder why. Gee, it sounds so appealing after listening to this. Yeah.
Well, if you're really smart and you care about finance and like getting good return on investment, it used to be that parents and grandparents would tell their kids to go into the same profession that they did.
Right.
You know, back in the day, your family had a trade or had an occupation. You kind of did that.
Right.
Now they're telling their kids, don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have really high quality people that have good families that it'd be great to have the next generation be coming in and taking over, but they're telling them not to.
Yeah.
So
this is just one more sign of this. We need to do something about financial wellness for everybody. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the doctors are under so much stress, that they have so much administration, all of that points to the same thing. We've got to get tools to people to be able to manage their finances well and actually probably try and reverse this situation where the insurance companies are making the decisions about our health care. Justin, closing argument from Justin.
Yeah, just to your point, I hear you. I thought the same thing. And I've been nothing but entrenched into the world of their personal lives based on the business. And if you look at the entire money spent in healthcare today, the trillions of dollars, guess what percentage of that share of the pie do doctors receive? Of all of the healthcare dollars, what percent you think?
20.
That's what I would think. That would be reasonable to me. Seven to 8% is all they receive.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure people will have questions. So let's get information from both of you. Justin, where can people reach out to you?
So you can email me or contact us through our website, physicianstrive.com. Email justin.nabaty@physicianstrive.com. And you can also reach me 402-515-6327.
Excellent. And Francis, your phone number?
I just want to thank Justin for coming on the show. And my phone number, of course, is 413-773-3333.
And you can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.